that's a panel of the talk and that's me. My collaborators on literature, these guys, it's not, I don't mean to say that these guys are both of these guys are feminists. So Ashwin Vishwanath is one of my primary collaborators on part of the story. And Ashwin is also a DDRC. In fact, part of the work that I'm going to talk about, that the work with Ashwin, part of it was done when we were both visiting here last, almost exactly a year back. So Chong Wong is a student at MIT, and Chengke Zhu is in Santa Barbara. So Drew Porter was still recently a graduate student at MIT, just moved to Berkeley as a postdoc. About a year back. Oh, good. Thank you.
I'd switched it off so that the nasty things I say would not be recorded. Till about a year back, I was not working on this in this area at all. I started working on it at the beginning of last summer, and I thought, okay, you know, beginning of 2012 summer, and I thought that even though it was very different from the kinds of problems I used to work on, so this will be a good summer fling, and you know, I'll do something different, and at the end of it, you know, I'll go back to the end of the summer. I'll go back to, you know, my natural habitat. But then I learned the wisdom of the following statement that some of the people have spent a lot of money on. I did it for cheap, you know, just my time. So the entire year passed and I'm still working on this stuff. Okay. So everyone's probably heard about topological insulators here. This is all the kinetic matter people. Hot topic in the field. So free electron band theory, which is what we use to describe electronic band insulators, it turns out it allows for two distinct insulating phases of electrons in the presence of time reversal symmetry, which in solid state is usually a good symmetry, unless you explicitly kill it with a magnetic field or something of that sort. So it's a conventional band insulator. But there's also a new kind of band insulator, namely the topological band insulator. And so this arises typically in the presence of strong spin-orbit interactions. And in three dimensions, not only arises typically in the presence of strong spin-orbit interactions, there's an even stronger condition. It requires strong spin-orbit coupling, which destroys conservation of all components of spin. But spin-orbit coupling, of course, preserves time reversal symmetry. Right? So here's, you know, famous pictures of famous topological insulators. So these states of matter, these topological insulators distinguished from conventional insulators by the presence of non-trivial surface states, which typically have gapless excitations that are protected in the most familiar example by the time reversal symmetry. So long as time reversal is preserved, for instance, in this 2D example, you can't gap out the edge states of the system. So in 2D, there's the quantum spin Hall effect, where there's helical edge modes in the sense that there's an upspin electron that's gapless at the edge and that's moving on, say, the left edge in this direction. And the downspin electron is moving the opposite direction. And the roles are reversed at the opposite edge. So in 3D, the most familiar surface of this topological insulator, there's one which again has gapless electrons in it, even though the bulk is insulating. So it's a metallic surface state. But this metallic surface is very interesting, and it has an odd number of Dirac cones, which is not possible with strict time reversal symmetry in a strictly two-dimensional lattice system, but nevertheless emerges at the surface of this 3D topological insulator. Okay. So that's the old story, 7-8 years old now. So this talk is going to be about the second version, strongly correlated topological insulators. Strong correlation physics is my own background, and it's where lots of the interesting things in quantum many-body physics happens. The free fermion problem is really, you know, very simple, right? So the theoretical aspects of it were settled, you know, very, very quickly after the initial realization that topological insulators can exist. So the real challenge at this stage is what happens once you have strong correlations together with the possibility of topological phenomena. So in particular, we want to ask the question about the possibility and properties of interaction-dominated phases, which may perhaps be show the phenomenon of topological insulation. So theoretically, this means that we have to move away from the crutch of free fermion Hamiltonians and band theory, right, and band topology and things of that sort, and deal with a correlated many-body problem in its own right. So this is a good time to be thinking about such questions because such an insulator may have shown up in experiments. This material, samarium hexaboride, which is a quite well known in materials communities. It's known as a Kondo insulator. It's a strongly correlated system, and at some intermediate scale, it behaves as though it has local moments, things of that sort. But eventually, so in general, a Kondo insulator system in which at some intermediate scale, there are local moments formed by some set of electrons. Those local moments are eventually screened at low temperature to form Kondo singlets, and the resulting low temperature state, in the case where it's a Kondo insulator, is an insulator with a gap. So this is hardly microscopically a free fermion system. It's a strongly interacting system. But then, in some cases, and it was suggested that in this may be precisely such a case. It may be that the resulting low temperature state, which is an insulator, may in fact be a topological insulator. Right? And there are experiments in the last 1 year which suggest that that the samarium hexaboride may very well be a strongly correlated topological insulator. If that's indeed established in coming months, then we really, there's a good reason to seriously think about this question of interaction-dominated topological insulation phenomena.
What's the best evidence?
Oh, the initial evidence, I don't know what the current best evidence is. Experiments are evolving rapidly. So the initial evidence was just that the resistivity looks insulating as you decrease the temperature. And then at low temperature, it saturates. And people try to think about the size effect or size dependence of this phenomenon and things of that sort. And it seemed as though it's consistent with surface transport. Right? So this much is clear, I think. The metallic resistivity that's shown by this material at low temperature is coming from surface states. Right? This is a 3D material. Now, whether it's a topological surface state or a boring surface state, at least initially, it wasn't entirely clear. There have been subsequent experiments more recently, which I don't yet know because there's no paper yet. But people are doing lots of things on this material, and we will know for sure, we'll hopefully know for sure in the months to come what's exactly going on. But, theoretically, materials like these, which involve rare earth elements, have strong spin-orbit coupling. And these are F electrons, and so they're strongly correlated. So this is a combination of strong correlations and strong spin-orbit coupling in these rare earth compounds, right? Which makes them natural playgrounds to explore, to realize phenomena such as interacting versions of topological insulators. Right? Anyway. So there is actually an Orpus paper, but I haven't looked at it yet. But my own guess is that it may be a bit hard to disentangle this in photoemission because the energy scales in materials of this sort, in this entire class of materials, is very, very small. There's a Kondo gap, which is much, much smaller than the Fermi, bare Fermi energy. And any Dirac node will have a dispersion which is set by the Kondo gap divided by the size of the Brillouin zone. So the Fermi velocity of the Dirac node, the Dirac velocity will be very, very small. So the solution may kill you, but these are theorist's pessimism. It's up to the experimentalists to prove us that they can actually see, prove to us that they can resolve what's going on. Okay, so that's sort of the general motivation. So let's suppose, you know, we're theorists, right? I don't know if there's any experimenters in this room. I'm a theorist. So let's, you know, pose some general questions about interacting topological insulators. Perhaps the most interesting question is, are there new faces that have no non-interacting counterpart? You know, you can, a zeroth order question, which I've not listed here, is whether the free fermion topological insulator is stable to weak interactions. And people have studied that kind of question in various contexts, and certainly in the familiar topological insulator with just time reversal and charge conservation, they are certainly stable. And this material that I just, you know, mentioned in the previous slide, samarium hexaboride, may very well turn out to be in the end, and it's quite likely, and the theory suggestion was certainly along these lines, that it's, even though it occurs in a strongly correlated situation, it's not really a new kind of topological insulating phase. Rather, it's something that's smoothly connected to a free fermion topological insulator, right? But there's a more general theoretical question, a more interesting question, which is whether there are new faces that can at all exist which have no non-interacting counterpart, right? And if so, what are their physical properties? And of course, we would like to know where in experiments they may show up. So to really, you know, get to the heart of this question, we have to think a bit more about what a topological insulator is and refine the question. The standard description of a topological insulator, of course, relies on non-trivial band structure. So once you go beyond free fermions, that's not a good guide, and you have to have a more refined description of what you mean by topological insulator. So how should we generalize three-dimensional topological insulators to interacting electrons? So for this talk, I'm going to put down some guidelines. I'm first going to demand that we look at the same symmetries as the standard topological band insulator, so charge conservation and time reversal. Right? So this is it's, you know, charge conservation just means we can talk about insulator versus conductor, right? And time reversal, it's natural as a symmetry. So let's take the same symmetries that protect the standard topological insulator, the celebrated, you know, electron topological insulator, and then ask, you know, what are the interacting versions of that state of matter? And the second guideline is to recognize that the topological band insulating faces are what's known as short-range entangled. I'll describe this a little bit more in the next slide. They have a unique bulk ground state, no fractional exit, no fractional charges, things of that sort. So they're quite unlike, you know, the more familiar exotic topological phase of matter, namely the fractional quantum Hall state, which has, say, on a torus, it has multiple ground states, it has fractional charge, blah, blah, blah. But the topological band insulators don't have any of that super exotic stuff. But they do share with the quantum Hall states the phenomenon that is protected at states, right? So in generalizing the phenomenon of topological insulation, one could follow many routes, right? One could say, let's generalize it in a way in which it becomes more like a fractional, more analogous to the fractional quantum Hall effect, but that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to restrict myself to interacting short-range entangled faces, right? Things that do not have continue to have a unique bulk ground state and so on. So I could remove either of these restrictions, and there's a whole field that will then open up. Lots of people are working on it, but I'm not going to talk about that at all. So this, in some sense, is the minimum generalization, but it's also a practical one because, by restricting to the symmetries of the topological band insulator, which are very natural symmetries, you know, charge conservation and time reversal, I give myself a chance of saying something that's relevant to the new generation of strongly correlated materials with strong spin-orbit coupling. Now, for the experts, I should point out that when I say charge symmetries of the standard electron topological insulator or charge conservation time reversal, the symmetry group is U1 semi-direct time reversal, Z2T. So U1 is charge conservation and Z2T is time reversal. So the semi-direct simply means that the action of U1 phase rotation and time reversal don't commute with each other. Okay.
Are there symmetries that you are going to demand on the Hamiltonian or on the
Both. I'm going to demand that the ground state is a symmetry-preserving state. But I'm certainly going to demand it of the Hamiltonian, and I'm also going to demand it of the ground state. So there's no spontaneous symmetry breaking. Just like in the standard topological balance later. Right? So with these conditions, I'm solving the same problem as the original classification of topological of band insulators with time reversal symmetry. But now I'm going to solve that problem in the presence of interactions. Okay. So let me briefly mention to you this distinction between short range entangled versus long range entangled phases. If we stick to gap phases of matter, exotic phases, exotic gap phase of matter, you know, the things that come to mind immediately are things which have what are known as intrinsic topological quantum order, like the fractional quantum Hall state or gap spin liquids, gap quantum spin liquids, things of that sort. So these have some emergent non-local structure in the ground state wave function that enables them to have, say, fractional charges. And this non-local structure is characterized as having long-range quantum entanglement. You know, one symptom, one signature of it is topological entanglement entropy that's non-zero. You know, but topological band insulators do not have any of this cool stuff. In some sense, they are the coolest that an uncool thing can be. Right? You demand that they don't do anything interesting in the bulk. You squeeze the life out of the guy. And then you still see whether it can do something interesting, right? And it does do something interesting, right? Anyway, so now we want to play the same game, the presence of interactions, right? Don't allow the bulk to do anything really interesting. You know, force it to be as boring as possible. It has a gap, it has no fractional charges, nothing. But can it still do something interesting, right? So that's the question. So now we can refine the question. So phases and properties of interacting short-ranged entangled electronic topological insulators with the realistic symmetry of U1 semi-direct Z2T, charge conservation and time reversal as appropriate for ordinary electrons, okay? So the plan of the talk is the following. I'll give a lightning review of free fermion topological insulators. It'll be really, really brief since this by the standards of this field, an ancient story. Then I'll review a slightly less ancient story, but again, by the standards of this field, and just an old story, which is the theory of boson topological insulators in 3D. You know, this is about a year old, but you know, in this field, a week is a long time. And then I'll move on to talk about electron topological insulators, which is the real thing I want to convey, but it's necessary to do these two things before. So the main result I'm going to claim is that there's a new classification, the presence of interactions, well, where there's a Z2 cubed classification, and this there's a number of new interacting topological insulators that have no known interacting counterpart, and I'll describe some of the properties of these new interacting TIs.
So from now on, when you say topological insulator, do you mean interacting or non-interacting?
It could be either. But I reserve the term topological band insulator for something that has a free fermion description. Right? So when I just say TI, it can be very general. When I say TBI, that's definitely something that's smoothly connected to a band insulator. Right. Okay, free fermion topological insulators. Everyone knows this, I presume. But anyway, so. So we characterize them by the presence or absence of non-trivial surface states, or alternately by the electromagnetic response. So as I've already mentioned, this famous surface state, the odd number of Dirac cones. So a key property of the surface is that a trivially gapped or localized insulator is not possible at the surface so long as time reversal is preserved. You know, you can put arbitrary amounts of disorder at the surface, and you can never get rid of the you can never get it to insulate trivially. Can't ever be a trivial insulator so long as time reversal is preserved. Right? So we spent some of our efforts showing that it can be insulating in some non-trivial way, but I'm not going to talk about that. So the electromagnetic response of this topological instrument is important and interesting. And the, in terms of physics, the most important aspect is really a surface quantum Hall effect that develops in this state. So if you break time reversal at the surface, either by depositing a ferromagnet on top of this material or by applying a magnetic field, so which gaps out the Dirac fermions at the surface, then there's the surface Hall conductance, which is quantized in units of an integer plus a half times e squared over h. So really, this comes from the physics of a single Dirac cone, Dirac fermion, in 2 + 1 dimensions. If you give it a mass, which will be induced by breaking time reversal, then the quantized Hall conductivity is shifted from an integer by half. So if you're a field theorist, there's a Chern-Simons term with level half of what's allowed in strictly 2D. So one symptom of this half-integer quantum Hall effect is that if you form a domain wall between two opposite T-breaking regions, for instance, if you deposit a ferromagnet and consider a domain wall of that ferromagnet, then right at the domain wall on the surface, there's a chiral edge mode, which is exactly the same as the chiral edge mode of the 2D fermion integer quantum Hall effect. It's a single chiral fermion that's moving along this domain wall. Okay. So more interesting, perhaps not more interesting, but a more, I think, powerful way to look at this electromagnetic response is to ask about, just what happens if you at least initially imagine not allowing the system to have boundaries, but integrating out the electrons in the presence of a coupling to an external electromagnetic field. Now, for any insulator, the electromagnetic response, the effective Lagrangian, the response Lagrangian that describes the effect of the electromagnetic field, will have a Maxwell term, some dielectric constant and permeability. There's also the possibility of a term of this E dot B term, just known as the axion term, with some coefficient theta over 4 pi squared. Now, under time reversal, since E is even under time reversal and B is odd, theta goes to minus theta. Now, on a closed manifold, there's also periodicity under theta going to theta plus 2 pi, and I'll explain that in a minute in some simple physics terms. So these two conditions together mean that only theta equals n pi is consistent with time reversal. Now, to understand this periodicity, it's interesting to think about a domain wall of a medium which characterized by a response with a non-zero theta. With you form a domain wall with a medium with response characterized by theta equals zero. Okay. Now, this theta term, I'm not going to do this here, but I think it's well known. This theta term can be written as the derivative of a Chern-Simons term. So when you form this domain wall, the only contribution that you pick up is right at the boundary where this domain, where this theta has this, changes from zero to theta to whatever value it has in the bulk. And at the boundary, you pick up a quantum Hall effect, a surface quantum Hall effect. Right? So the surface quantum Hall effect coming from this term is precisely theta over 2 pi. Now it's known, and it was argued in these papers, Chi, Hughes, and Zhang, and by Sin, Moore, and Vanderbilt, that the free fermion topological insulator is characterized by theta equals pi. Okay. This is consistent with the surface quantum Hall effect that I described in the previous slide, the half, which is the important thing. So theta over 2 pi, when theta is pi, is half. So now we can understand physically the meaning of the periodicity in theta. So theta goes to theta plus 2 pi means that you're changing the surface sigma xy by an integer. But physically, that's not changing the bulk at all, because it means that in terms of the surface quantum Hall effect, you're just changing this integer n, which corresponds to depositing a known 2D state, the 2D fermion integer quantum Hall state, onto the surface. You're not really changing anything in the bulk. All the important information is really contained in the half. Right? So that's why, so that's a way to understand the periodicity under theta going to theta plus 2 pi. So there's another consequence of the axion response, which will also be useful for what I'm going to talk about. If we imagine this, you know, this is a conceptual tool, right? I guess a perimeter, I don't know how to explain this, but, you know, the general kinetic matter theorists, you tell them introduce a magnetic monopole, they start worrying. let's imagine we introduce an external magnetic monopole in this electromagnetic field. So the electromagnetic field, we imagine it's compact, right? Now it's well known again that this theta term implies that the magnetic monopole, such a magnetic monopole, acquires an electric charge of theta over 2 pi. So this was pointed out by Witten in the 1970s, and it's known as the Witten effect. So, you know, the basic reason is the following. This theta term, if you wrote the electric field in terms of the scalar potential, this term looks like this. And then if you integrate by parts, this becomes this guy plus dot, dot, dot. Now, divergence B measures the, divergence B is 2 pi times the magnetic monopole. So therefore, you get theta over 2 pi. And anything that couples to A0, what couples to A0 is electric charge. So this tells you that the magnetic charge density acquires an electric charge. Right? So there's a well-known story about the theta term coming from field theory of the distant past. Okay, so that was the review of the pre-fermion topological insulator. Now let me make my detour into boson topological insulators. So why make this detour at all? I mean, one reason is that it's cool, it's just 1 year old, but for the purpose of this talk, it's not just that it's cool and it's 1 year old, it's actually necessary. You know, the first reason is more of a practical reason. In terms of understanding how to think about topological insulators without the crutch of free fermions, it's good to start with bosons because, you know, free bosons are necessarily trivial. Right? Free bosons don't know how to do anything other than Bose condense, and that, of course, is a trivial phenomenon. Right? So we must deal with an interacting theory right away when we talk about boson insulators. Without interactions, bosons will never form an insulator. Right? So we are forced to think about TI phase without the aid of a free fermion model. Right? So we are therefore setting ourselves up for the real challenge of thinking about electrons. Right? It's a warm-up exercise. But it's more than just a warm-up exercise. There's also natural realizations of correlated bosons in solid-state systems. You know, every quantum spin system can be thought of as a correlated boson system. You know, spins at different sites commute, so we should think of spins as bosons. And quantum spin systems, of course, exist. So in the context of a spin system, we can pose the question, whether it's a spin analog of a topological insulator. So I like to call that a topological paramagnet. This should be distinguished from the more exotic quantum spin liquid state. The quantum spin liquid is a long-range entangled state, so I want to think about short-range entangled states of spin systems, you know, with a gap. And ask whether they can still be, in the presence of symmetry, be in a state with non-trivial surface excitations, but nothing in the bulk. Of course, we can always point to cold atoms to realize correlated bosons. But for the purpose of this talk, the most important point really is that correlated bosons are a stepping stone to think about correlated fermions. Okay? So that's why it's necessary for me to review some of this work on bosons. So I'm going to focus on some boson TIs with time reversal in three dimensions and describe their properties. So the three key pieces of physics that have emerged from the study of the boson topological insulator. The first is that there's a quantized magnetoelectric effect parameterized by this axion response in the response to an external electromagnetic field. So suppose my world is made out of bosons, right? And these form an insulator. And in three dimensions, and in the presence of time reversal. Right? And then I introduce an external electromagnetic field and ask about the response. Right? So it's still characterized by an axion angle theta, an E dot B term. But for bosons, the non-trivial theta value turns out as either 2 pi or even 0 under these conditions that I've described, set for myself. You know, no long-range entanglement, no topological order, blah, blah, blah. The second piece of the physics that characterizes the 3D bosonic TIs, but that if we look at the surface, the vortex of the boson field at the surface becomes exotic. Its statistics becomes fermionic, for instance, or it becomes a Cramer's doublet so that it transforms projectively under time reversal, even though all the microscopic degrees of freedom transform non-projectively under time reversal. And related to that, if I think about the external bulk monopole of the electromagnetic field, it also becomes exotic in much the same way as the surface vortex. This bulk monopole may be a fermion in some cases, may be a Cramer's doublet in other cases, or both in some other cases. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And is that sort of like a way of making sense of why theta has to be 2 pi?
No. Well, if you did that, then theta will be 8 pi. Or rather 4 pi, I guess, because it's you know, the theta term is proportional to e squared. Right? So it's not that. There's another general reason, which I actually am not going to describe in too much detail. But let me start with that thing. I'll just mention one thing for why theta is 2 pi. So the statement is that for bosons, theta equals 2 pi is distinct from theta equals 0. In other words, the surface of a theta equals 2 pi boson system in 3D requires the 3D bulk for it to exist. Well, the periodicity, the right periodicity for a boson system is theta going to theta plus 4 pi. And this is related to a different phenomenon that we described a year back. Actually, initially, Ashwin and his postdoc, Yanming Liu, described it in terms of in their classification of 2D SPT phases. And it's related to the fact, by the exact consequence of the fact that if you think about 2D integer quantum Hall states of bosons, things, you know, states that do not have any topological order, but nevertheless have a quantum Hall effect, that this 2D integer quantum Hall effect of bosons can occur, but only so long as the sigma xy is even. So that's actually very easy to understand, but I won't describe that here. The condition of no bulk topological order forces sigma xy in two dimensions for bosons to be even. Okay. So this evenness of sigma xy, if you go back, if you just think about the understanding this periodicity in terms of surface quantum Hall effect, it immediately then implies that this is the right periodicity for bosons, and that theta equals 2 pi cannot actually occur for bosons without there being some non-trivial, topological insulation in the bulk. Actually, it turns out that depending on how time reversal is realized, boson topological insulators exist which even have theta equals 0. So in those cases, the electromagnetic response tells you nothing about whether the system is in a topological insulator phase or not. Anyway, I'm just sort of summarizing the result and giving you a glimpse of where it comes from without really explaining it in detail. Okay? Said this, not ancient, but it's still old. It's 1 year old. So the second property of a boson topological insulator that I want to emphasize is the surface physics. After all, that's where the non-trivialness of the topological insulators most dramatically manifest. So the surface either spontaneously breaks the defining symmetry, which of course can always happen, or if the surface is gapped, it necessarily has intrinsic topological order, even though the bulk does not. Right? I'll talk about this a bit more as we go along. But the surface physics, the non-trivial surface physics of the boson topological insulator is nicely captured in a dual vortex-based description of the surface. So the idea here is to think about this bulk insulator. So this bulk insulator, because it's an insulator, the vortex lines of the boson field must have proliferated and must be swimming all over the place, so the boson phase is not well defined. Right? It's not a superfluid, which means that the vortices must have proliferated. And in three dimensions, the vortices are line defects. They're oriented line defects, so they're proliferated. So let's think about where this vortex line penetrates the surface. Right? The surface is a 2D system, and where the vortex line penetrates the surface, there's a point vortex. Right? And let's think about a description of the surface in terms of these point vortices. So that's a dual description of the surface that's complementary but equivalent to a conventional description in terms of the boson degrees of freedom itself. Now, there's an old story for conventional two-dimensional bosons. You can either use a charge-based description in terms of what the boson's doing, or you can provide a vortex-based description in terms of what the vortices of the boson phase are doing. So this is known as charge-vortex duality. So it's a dual Landau-Ginzburg description of a 2D boson, 2 plus 1 dimensional boson system in terms of a bosonic vortex field, which is then coupled to a fluctuating U1 gauge field, non-compact, and a description of the conventional insulator of 2D bosons, 2 plus 1 dimensional bosons, or Mort insulator, is simply as a vortex condensate. Right? So this is the standard story when you do a duality transformation. Right. The dual variables are condensed in the disordered phase. Right. So we condense the vortex, we'll get a trivial insulator. Now, the 3D boson topological insulator surface, when I think about these points where the vortex lines penetrate, if the vortices could condense, I would get a trivial insulator. Right. If the vortices could condense trivially, I would get a trivial insulator. But then there's no sense in which the surface would be exotic. And as it's a topological insulator, it's required to have an exotic surface. Right? So the way that's implemented in this dual Landau-Ginzburg theory is the surface vortex is unconventional, it's unusual. In one example, the surface vortex is a fermion, so then it can't condense. Right? Fermions can't condense. So this route to getting a trivial insulator is blocked. In another example, the surface vortex is a Cramer's doublet, which it's allowed to be because it's coupled to a gauge field, so it can transform projectively under symmetries. So then again, it can't condense while preserving the symmetries, because when it condenses, it'll necessarily break time reversal, or it could be both, in which case it can't condense. So in either case, with any of these, it can't condense to get a trivial gap insulator. Right? So this is the key part of the physics that characterizes the surface of the 3D boson topological insulator, that the key physics is revealed most naturally in this dual vortex description in terms of an unusual vortex field with either unusual statistics or unusual quantum numbers. Okay. So finally, the third piece of physics is this exotic bulk monopole. If I couple an external electromagnetic field, what happens to the bulk magnetic monopole? So there's a bulk edge correspondence, and the bulk monopole, you can think of it as being created by taking a monopole from the outside and pushing it through the system, and it leaves behind a vortex at the surface, and a monopole carries magnetic flux. So it creates a vortex of the boson at the surface, and if the vortex at the surface is exotic, then so will the bulk monopole. Right? So the bulk monopole, again, will be either a fermion or Cramer's doublet or both. And this is for the case where theta is 2 pi, where the vortex is a fermion, or the bulk monopole is a fermion, is also emphasized in a very nice paper by Max Mitlitsky et al., who inferred it directly, the theta response, and used it to constrain the surface. But here I'm taking sort of a different point of view for now. Okay, so those are the key, that's a summary of the key parts of the physics of the 3D boson topological insulator. So now let me focus on one aspect of one lesson that we learned from studying the boson topological insulator, which is very, very important for what I'm going to talk about later. So that's this possibility of intrinsic topological order at the surface of the 3D topological insulator, even though the bulk does not have any such topological order. So the first statement about this intrinsic topological order is that it's a symmetry-preserving state. You can preserve all the symmetries at the surface of the topological insulator at the cost of having topological order at the surface, intrinsic topological order. But the symmetry is realized anomalously in the sense that the same topological order when it's realized in a strictly two-dimensional system, cannot realize the symmetry in the same manner. So there's no way to regulate the theory on a lattice with a local realization of symmetry while implementing, you know, the symmetry in the manner in which it's implemented at the surface of this 3D bulk state. Right? So seen as a topological quantum field theory, it's a TQFT with some extra symmetry, and the symmetry implementation is not possible in a strictly 2+1 dimensional system, but it requires the bulk of, you know, the bulk for it to exist. So this sounds a bit exotic. It is exotic, but conceptually, again, it's been really, really powerful. And by targeting such anomalous surface topological ordered states, we've been able to provide, you know, microscopic constructions of many of these boson TIs. And there's also all kinds of connections to other questions that many people, including us, have been interested in, but I won't talk about that now. So let me give you an example of an explicit construction of a 3D, of various 3D boson SPT states. So the strategy, so this really is the invention of my student Chong Wong. So the strategy is to stack together layers of V2 topological ordered faces, meaning faces that are described by a deconfined Z2 gauge theory in 2+1 dimensions. Most of you probably know that as a toric code. With symmetry that's allowed in strictly two-dimensional systems. So each layer is a state that's allowed in strictly two-dimensional systems. And then we stack together such layers. And the idea is to induce a phase transition that confines all bulk topological quasiparticles, but leaves behind some deconfined things on the surface. And so you have surface topological order, even though the bulk is all confined, there's nothing non-trivial in the bulk. But using this strategy, Chong showed how to engineer surface topological order that's specific to particular symmetry-protected topological states. So let me show you how that works in this example. So let's take a case. So this, the story code-like topological order, Z2 gauge theory, is characterized by 4 topological sectors. There's a trivial one, and then there's E, M, and epsilon in some standard notation. So E and M are self bosons, but they are mutual semions. Epsilon is a self fermion, but it's also a mutual semion with E and M. Right? It's just Z2 gauge theory. Right? Z2 gauge theory, 2 of the topological quasiparticles are self bosons, and the third is a self fermion, and they're all mutual semions with each other. Take one around the other all the way, you get a phase of pi. So let's take a situation in which in each layer, the E particle has charge 1/2, the M particle has charge 0. This is actually the standard kind of Z2 topological order that we're familiar with. So Roger finds them every day in his numerics. So it's something that, you know, we've studied a lot, that we're familiar with. It's a very familiar phase. Now starting from, you know, stacked layers of such familiar Z2 topological ordered faces, let's take these combinations shown in ellipses, E in one layer, M in the next layer, E in the third layer. And let's take such combinations for each set of I's. Now each one of these, since each one of these individually is a boson, and they have no mutual statistical interactions, their self-statistics is bosonic. But the mutual statistics of 2 of these guys for 2 different I's is also bosonic. They have no mutual statistical interaction. That's because if you take this guy and you take, say, the next guy, E and M are mutual semions in this in layer 4, but M and E in layer 5 are also mutual semions. The net result is that this composite, when you take that around this composite, you get a phase of 0 or 2 pi. And it's that you don't get a phase of pi. So they're mutual bosons, which means that you can simultaneously condense all of these guys. So everything shown in ellipses can be simultaneously condensed. Right? So when you condense all of these, let's focus on the non-trivial excitations of any one layer, let's say layer 4. Let's look at the E particle of this layer. So this E particle, it's local with respect to this, it's local with respect to that. but it's non-local with respect to this composite, which is condensed. And therefore, the E particle is confined. Right? It has mutual phase around something that's condensed, and so it's confined. And the same story applies for the M particle, and once these two are confined, so is the epsilon particle. So everything in the bulk is confined, and you end up with a bulk state that is trivial. Right? But now let's look at the surface. So the surface, this guy, is local with respect to everything that's condensed. It's local with respect to this, and it's local with respect to this, and so that survives. But then, so does this object. It's a bound state of M in the first layer and E in the second layer. So M is a mutual semion with this E, but this E2 is a mutual semion with this M2, and therefore this object is local with respect to what's condensed. And it's, of course, local with respect to this. So these two guys survive in the top layer, right? But these two guys are mutual semions. So the surface, I have a deconfined surface where I have a Z2 gauge theory of the surface, right? So that by itself is not, one can definitely engineer things of this sort. But the interesting thing is that, you know, this E1 and M1, E2, since each E carries charge half, these both carry charge half, right? So this is a Z2 gauge theory where both the bosonic topological quasiparticles carry fractional electric charge. And it's easy to convince yourself that with time reversal, that can never happen in a strictly two-dimensional system. But here I've given you an explicit construction where it happens at the bulk, at the surface of a three-dimensional bulk. And in fact, this is the known surface topological order of a three-dimensional boson topological insulator. So this kind of construction can be generalized to all the phases that we studied, all the phases that Ashwin and I studied. So it's an explicit construction of these various symmetry-protected topological phases of bosons. So it's a very nice example that I want to talk about in the next two slides. In particular, there's a state that we suspected would exist, that Ashwin and I suspected would exist, but this construction gives us an explicit construction of the state. Now, as many of you know, the symmetry-protected topological phases of bosons were classified by Chie Chen, Jingcheng Gu, Jingcheng Liu, and Shougang Wen. So this classification is more or less complete, but it misses one state. Right? And this one state, so the methods they use is based on cohomology, but this one state that it misses is, you know, which we came across through our methods. There's a simple construction of it using this couple layer business. So let me talk about that for a minute. So this state shows up when we talk about bosonic symmetry-protected topological phases where the only symmetry is time reversal. Okay? So for instance, if you have a spin system, so there's no charge anymore, you only have spins, and you break all symmetries except time reversal. Right? Imagine you have strong spin orbit couplings, so as Zylow-Shinsky, Murea, single ion anisotropy, anything you want, but preserve time reversal. So then, what are the possible SPT states? And I would call these time reversal protected topological paramagnets. These are spin analogs of topological insulators. So this cohomology approach gives you a Z2 classification, meaning there's only one non-trivial state. But we actually find the correct classification Z2 squared. So it's an extra root state that goes beyond cohomology. Okay. So let me describe these two states. In fact, this turns out to play an important role in the fermion story. Yeah.
Would the classification be complete if you add this extra state? Do you know that, or can there be other states we don't know?
Yeah, at least with this symmetry, it looks like it is. Now, if you ask me for a most general group G, I don't know. You know, we don't classify things by and large. At least not in the general case. We just look at you know, various examples of symmetry groups. So in the particular examples that I've looked at, which either charge conservation and time reversal or just time reversal, this is the only thing that's missing. Now, but I don't know what, for a general group G, I don't know what else is missing or if anything is missing. So I myself don't understand why the cohomology misses this extra state. Now, Shougang suggested to me that it may be because the method that they used, which discretizes on space-time, implements time reversal without inverting the lattice points in space-time in the time direction. But you have to do that for a full implementation of time reversal. So maybe that's where the problem is. He wasn't sure, but if that's what they did, that's a source of problem. Which then suggests that in the time reversal is where there may be some missing states. Right? So I don't know, but since the issues are all on the cohomology side, and I don't even know what that word means, it's not for me to address those things. But I joke with Shogang that I will work in this field only so long as I can make progress without knowing the meaning of the word cohomology. Okay. So these bosonic SPD states are only time reversal. Let me first describe the state that's within cohomology. Right? Turns out this state is actually very, very interesting. It's very subtle. In fact, it's the beyond cohomology state in terms of the physics. Is far less subtle than the within cohomology state. So we have almost no ways to characterize the within cohomology state. When Ashwin and I were working on this thing, we dreamed of the surface topological order out of desperation to find a way of characterizing the state. Right? So it turns out that the only characterization we have is based on the surface topological order. And the surface topological order is, again, a Z2 gauge theory, you know, toric code for the quantum information. For Gayfree, where E and M are both Cramer's doublets. This again is not possible in strictly 2D systems with time reversal. You know, for people with condensed matter background, it's asking for a quantum spin liquid in which both the spinon and Weisson are, you know, Cramer's doublets, while the fermion is a Cramer's singlet, a spin zero. Right? Such states can't exist in strict 2D with time reversal, but it can exist at the surface of this 3D, you know, within cohomology state. So it's easy enough to give a couple layer construction, basically along exactly the same lines as the ones that I described before. Just take a conventional, in each layer, take a conventional 2D Z2 spin liquid, where the E is a Cramer's doublet and M is a singlet. So E is a spinon and M is a bison in spin liquid language. And then repeat whatever I did before, and you end up with this surface topological order. So this is the construction of this within cohomology state. Okay, the beyond cohomology state. So the surface topological order turns out is really interesting. And I actually, you know, this entered my consciousness during a conversation with Gayfree last July when I was here. He showed me some impenetrable classification of all topological orders in 2D. By Zheng and Wang, another DRC. But I was excited for a brief while till I realized that this could only occur at the surface of a 3D SPT, but that wasn't clear before with time reversal. So the surface topological order is a time reversal invariant all fermion Z2 gauge theory, where all three topological quasiparticles are fermions. Right? Unlike the usual 2D Z2 gauge theory, where two of them are bosons and the third one is a fermion. Now, this all fermion one, when it's realized in strict 2D, it's known, and it's very easy to argue, that it has a chiral central charge of 4. So at the edge, you have 4 chiral fermions that are going around in one direction. So clearly, that state cannot be time reversal invariant in strict 2D, but it shows up naturally at the surface of this 3D beyond cohomology state. So we can give a couple layer construction of such a state. So let's start again. You know, the couple layer construction is always the same. You know, do the same trick again and again. Right? We start now with a trivial realization of time reversal in each 2D layer. So take your favorite toric code model and assume that everything transforms trivially under time reversal. That can definitely happen. And now repeat the same couple layer construction, but now you form these bound states, where you take the fermion in the first layer, an M particle in the second layer, and the fermion in the third layer, and these are all self-bosons and mutual bosons, condense them, confine everything in the bulk, but at the surface, you'll be left behind with this all fermion Z2 gauge theory. But now it's realized in a time reversal invariant manner. Right? So there's an explicit construction of the state in a time reversal invariant system, and it's a state, it gives us a new SPT state for bosons with only time reversal invariance, which is beyond what's there in the cohomology classification. We already exhausted that with the previous slide. Right? Now, part of the reason one knows that it's beyond cohomology is because if you break time reversal to the surface, and then you ask about possible quantized Hall transport, this state has a quantized thermal Hall effect, which is plus minus 4, and which really is the same physics as the one that requires that when this state is realized in strict 2D, there's a chiral central charge of 4. There's 4 chiral fermions going in one direction. So the domain wall between the two T broken states at the surface, or the edge modes of a 2D chiral boson integer quorum Hall state, which I've not described and which some of you may know as the E8 state in 2D. I used to call it the Kitaev E8 state, but at least a couple of people told me that I should not, because Kitaev not written a paper on it, and I'm happy to call it anybody's E8 state. It's not mine. Anyway, so the summary of the boson detour. So the boson detour, sort of interesting for its own sake, and there's all kinds of ideas and so on, but I suspect I lost a huge portion of the audience. That's all right. You don't need to remember much other than that there's cool things with bosons. But it's mainly to open our minds to what's possible once there are interactions and the ways of thinking about the problem, without using free fermions. Right? When we think in terms of free fermion language, our brain is going in a certain direction, and we want to activate a different part of the brain. Right? So the boson example is good for that. And the most useful lesson as far as what follows is concerned is that it's very useful to think in terms of the surface topological order. Okay, so now we've built up all the muscle that we need to think about the real problem. Right? So this is our most recent story. So let me remind you what the problem is. So electronic insulators, which are short-range entangled in 3 dimensions, that's what I'm interested in. I'm also only interested in realistic symmetries of charge conservation and time reversal. Imagine a strong spin-orbit coupling so that no component of spin is conserved. And with these conditions, band theory gives me a Z2 classification. So what happens beyond band theory? How many such phases are there, and what are their physical properties? So that's the question that I'm after. So here's the answer. So the claim is that it's classified by Z2 cubed, corresponding to a total of 8 distinct faces. So Z2 cubed is generated by 3 generators, so there's 3 root faces. So there's a familiar topological band insulator, that's one face. And there are 2 new faces, which have very simple physical descriptions. One should just think of them as electronic Mort insulators, where I first form Mort insulator from the electrons. Then I have a spin system, then I put this, so the spin system has no charge left, and the only symmetry of the original electron system that it inherits is time reversal. So it's a spin system with only time reversal symmetry, and as we just described, that there are 2 such root states for such a spin system, that gives us the 3 states. And by combining these, we can get all 8 phases. So before proceeding, let me make a comment. From electrons, you can always form bosons, right? And put bosons in SPT, as you were suggesting, form Cooper pairs, right? I've said we'll form spins and put the spins in SPT, but you can also form Cooper pairs and put the Cooper pairs in an SPT. But the important point is that not all such boson SPTs stay distinct once you have electrons in the system. Once your Hilbert space allows for, electrons, charge E fermions, then the different boson SPTs that you can form by taking composites of the fermions don't stay distinct once your Hilbert space is an electronic Hilbert space. The other comment is that there's no intrinsically electronic topological insulator other than the original topological band insulator. So the new ones that we are finding are all derived by forming bosons out of the electrons, putting the bosons in an SPT state. Most simply, forming spins from the electrons and putting the spins in an SPT state. So let me give you the proof Now, having come this far, the proof is actually very, very simple. So let's start with this axion response. So this is more or less the same as some other slide that I showed. So for any 3D insulator, there's the Maxwell term and a theta term, the response, and at time reversal, theta goes to minus theta. And in a fermion system, the periodicity is 2 pi. So only 0 and pi are consistent at time reversal. Okay. Now, suppose in our search for for new phases, suppose there were two distinct insulators which have theta equals pi. Right? Then by stacking them together, right, by considering a composite system where I take both these insulators and put them together, I can get a new system which is a theta equals 0 insulator. Right? So to look for new insulators, it's enough to restrict my search to new theta equals 0 insulators. Okay? So that's what I'll focus on. We don't need to think about theta equals pi. We only had to think about theta equals 0. So when theta equals 0, the Witten effect tells us that the monopole has charge 0. I mean, there could also be integer charge monopole, but there is a monopole that has charge 0. Now, time reversal, so that fixes the symmetry of the monopole under the U1 part of the symmetry. So the full symmetry is U1 and time reversal. So I had to ask about the symmetry of the monopole under time reversal. Now, the time reversal, since magnetic charge is odd, the monopole goes to an anti-monopole. So M goes to M dagger. In general, there can be a phase. But this phase is meaningless, and you can combine, define a new time reversal by combining with the magnetic gauge transformation, set this phase to be 0, which means the monopole transforms in some fairly trivial way under time reversal. It goes to an anti-monopole, end of story. So the symmetry is the monopole. Under the two symmetries, charge and time reversal are fixed, right? Once theta is 0. So that's the only possibility for what the monopole can do. In terms of symmetry, there's still two distinct possibilities that one could contemplate, which is in terms of the statistics of the monopole. The monopole may either be a boson or a fermion. So let's discuss these two cases one by one. Is there a question? No. Let me first talk about the bosonic magnetic monopole. So let's think about what it implies for the surface, right? Because the surface is where all the interesting things happen. So let's tunnel a monopole from the vacuum into the bulk, push a monopole from the outside world into the bulk. So this tunneling event, since the monopole is charge zero and is a boson by assumption in this case, the tunneling event must leave behind something at the surface, which is also a charge zero boson. Now, it's convenient to think about a particular surface termination where the surface is a superconductor. So in a superconductor, when I push a monopole through a superconductor, I've created, you know, HC over E flux in the superconductor. So this means the monopole tunneling leaves behind a HC over E vortex at the surface superconductor. Okay? So the statement that we learned from the bulk is that the surface superconductor of this bulk state has a HC over E vortex, which is a boson, and it transforms trivially into a HC over E anti-vortex under time reversal because monopole goes to an anti-monopole under time reversal. Right? Now, there's some subtlety. It turns out that the most general case one should consider is to allow the surface superconductor to have coexisting topological order, but that's not really essential. I mean, to get the basic idea, this story is enough. You know, the complication discussed in an appendix of our paper. So now, yeah, sorry, was there a question? No. So now that we understand one property of one surface termination where the surface is a superconductor, now let's go to a symmetry preserving surface by disordering the long range phase order of the superconductor by proliferating vortices. Now, we have available to us a bosonic vortex, namely a HC over E vortex. So in a superconductor, the HC over E vortex is not the fundamental vortex. It's HC over 2E is the fundamental vortex. But the only thing we know is that the HC over E vortex is bosonic, right? And therefore, we can condense it. We know nothing about the HC over 2E vortex. So when we condense this vortex, the result is a symmetry-preserving insulating surface, which now has intrinsic topological order because we condense double vortices rather than single vortices. Now, it's known from old story from 14, 15 years back on 2D spin liquids and spin short separated states that condensing double vortices is a way to produce a state from a superfluid, is a way to produce a state with Z2 gauge theory like topological order, Torrey code like topological order. But in terms of the physics, it's very clear. So when I condense a HCOE vortex, I'll get an insulator. But since the vorticity that I'm condensing is HCOE, the charge is quantized in units of E, right? So this means that I have a surface topological quantum field theory where every topological sector can be made neutral, in the sense that there's a neutral excitation in every topological sector. And that's because, so the charge is quantized in units of integer. So I have integer charge, but once I have integer charge, I can always add this local object, namely the physical electron, and convert and bind enough physical electrons to neutralize that integer charge. So without changing the topological sector, I can produce an excitation that's neutral. Right? This means the surface TQFT has this following structure. It's a neutral boson TQFT times supplemented by the physical electron. Okay, so all the non-trivial things happen in this neutral boson sector, and then the physical electron is just something that I add on. Okay, so the implication of this is that if there is any bulk SPT order, it's the same as for a neutral boson SPT, right? Supplemented by physical electrons. So there's nothing more than with this bosonic monopole and a theta equals zero, the only thing that can happen is a neutral boson SPT. Okay. So these are the states that I've called topological paramagnets. And so this is what I described earlier on the talk. They are classified by Z2 squared. And we described them as electronic mode translators, where you form neutral spins, which don't carry any charge. And these spins form an SPT. And because no component of spin is conserved, the only symmetry for the spin system is time reversal symmetry. So these are these time reversal protected topological paramagnets. And there are two root states, which I described earlier in the talk. There's one state which is within cohomology, whose surface topological order is Z2 gauge theory, where E and M are both Cramers. And there's another that's beyond cohomology, where the surface topological order is this all fermion Z2 gauge theory. Okay. So that's it. So that's, completes one half of the proof, or maybe 90% of the proof. So the logic was to say that, look, theta must be zero or pi in the bulk. We already have a theta equals pi example, which is the free fermion topological insulator. So any new states can be all be obtained from theta equals zero states. And when theta equals zero, the monopole symmetry properties of the monopole are trivial. Only what remains is whether it's boson or fermion. If it's boson, this is all that's possible. Okay? So the only part that's remaining is what if it's a fermion. Okay. But before I do that, let me skip this. It's if someone wants, I can give you this detail. Why not first form Cooper pairs and put them in a boson SPT? It turns out you could do that, but it's not distinct from the spin SPT that I've already described once I have electrons. So it's already included in this classification. Okay, but let me talk about the remaining part of the proof. What happens if the bulk monopole is fermionic? So this is actually a really, really interesting, question about quantum field theory. Can the charge and the monopole both be fermionic in a system of this sort, right, with time reversal symmetry? So let me first construct such a state. Right, that will show that it's indeed possible for both the electric charge and the magnetic monopole to be a fermion. So next, I'll argue that this state is not really a state that can exist in a purely electronic system, right, in strict three dimensions. And if you want it in a purely electronic system, you have to go to the surface of a 4 plus 1 dimensional theory, which kinetic matter physicists don't give a damn about, right, at least most of us. So to construct such a state, I'm going to do that by taking a Bose-Fermi mixture, where in my Hilbert space, microscopic Hilbert space, I have both charge E fermions and charge E bosons. Right? This can never arise in a purely electronic system. In a purely electronic system, the charge E objects are fermions, and any charge boson must necessarily have, you know, charge which is an even multiple of E. Right? So a Bose-Fermi mixture of these properties can never arise in a purely electronic system. But let me think about that nevertheless. I'm allowed to do that. And let me put my fermions in a trivial band insulator, which I'm allowed to do. Let me put my bosons in a boson SPT, okay, with charge conservation and time reversal. And then let me take my boson gap. So initially, let me consider such a state in a manifold with no boundaries. Right? And let me take the boson gap to infinity. So, you know, it's sort of a weird thing to do. I say I'm going to take this Bose-Fermi mixture, and I say that I'm going to push the bosons off to infinite energy. Right? So at any finite energy, your Hilbert space has no bosons in it. Right? So the Hilbert space is, the bulk Hilbert space is exactly what I want. It's a purely electronic system. Right? There are only fermions, only charge-carrying excitations with odd charge or fermions, okay, with odd integer multiples of E or fermions. But now let me think about the fate of an external monopole. Now, the fermion is in a trivial band insulator, so it doesn't affect the monopole. But the boson, even though its charge gap is infinity, because the boson is in an SPT state, it does something to the monopole. And if I put this in this theta equals 2 pi boson SPT, then the neutral boson becomes a fermion. Neutral monopole becomes a fermion, right? So even though, you know, I've banished my pushed the boson gap in the bulk to infinity, it shows up when I perturb the system with an external electromagnetic field. The magnetic monopole knows that the bosons are still there somewhere at infinite energy, and they become fermions. So therefore, I've then constructed in this composite system, I've constructed everything that I seem to want. A bulk Hilbert space, which is purely electronic, but an external monopole, which is a fermion. And of course, the charge is a fermion because the charge-carrying excitations are just the electrons, right? So it looks as though this can happen. But now let me argue that it can't happen, okay? And the reason is that the state that I've constructed is not edgeable. So this is perhaps the contribution to the field and the English language that I've made in the last 1 year that I'm most proud of. I've invented this word called edgeable. It's even made it past the referees of the editors, proofreaders of Physical Review B. So edgeable means that the state must allow a physical edge to the vacuum. Right? All states that can exist in strict 3D are edgeable in that they allow a physical edge to the vacuum. Now, if a state can only exist at the surface of a 4 plus 1 dimensional SPT, it's not edgeable to the vacuum because there's no trivial vacuum at the surface of the 4 plus 1 dimensional SPT. Right? So to demand that something is a physical state in a given dimension, it's necessary to demand that it's also edgeable. Right? And we've used this edgeability criterion to great power in many contexts, many of our SPT studies in the last 1 year. But let's examine whether the state that I've constructed is edgeable in three dimensions. Right? So let's consider the symmetry preserving surface termination of the state that I've constructed. The fermions, I put them in a trivial band insulator, so they're not doing anything interesting at the edge. Right? But the bosons are in a boson SPT, so they have to do something interesting at the edge, even when the boson gap is infinity, right, in the bulk. So we know that the bosons have intrinsic Z2 topological order at the surface, where E and M carry charge E over 2, and epsilon is charge neutral, right? But my boson charge gap is infinity, so this E and M at the surface have been pushed to infinity. You can't see them. They're not visible in the spectrum anymore. But epsilon, the fermion, is charge neutral, so it survives in the spectrum, which means that at the surface, I have a charge neutral fermion. Okay, but this charge-neutral fermion is local with respect to all the other finite energy excitations, because the only thing it's non-local with respect to are E and M, but they are gone from the spectrum. Right? So it looks as though I have a local excitation at the surface, which is a charge-neutral fermion, that cannot happen in a purely electronic system. It's not there in the Hilbert space for a purely electronic system. Right? So this means that this state is not edgeable in the Hilbert space for purely electronic system. It requires, even though the boson's not there in the bulk, it sort of makes its presence known. So this state, this fermionic monopole state, is not allowed in SIG 2-3D in time reversal symmetric electronic systems. It may be allowed at the surface of 4 plus 1D SPT, but since I'm a loyal condensed matter theorist, I refuse to study 4 plus 1D states. So I don't know the answer to this question, but you know, I don't know whether it's allowed at the surface of 4 plus 1D. For my purpose, I know that it's not allowed where it might show up and you know change my classification. So in some sense, that's it, right? We've ruled out the possibility of fermionic monopole. With bosonic bulk monopole, everything is simple. We've you know described all the states, and so that's it. Let me close by describing the physical properties of these 8 interacting 3D topological instances, things that you know form the Z2 cubed. So 4 of these have theta equals 0, theta is the axion response, and the other 4 have theta equals pi. So the 4 that have theta equals 0, one is the trivial insulator, you know, the one that exists, that we knew existed before 2005. The other 3 are all topological paramagnets of the kind that I've described. And the 4 that have theta equals pi, one is the topological band insulator, and the other 3 are combinations of the TBI with these 3 topological paramagnets. So now we know that we understand this much, we can start. The next question to ask is how to tell in experiments. If we fantasize, suppose you know samarium hexaboride, or people are talking about plutonium hexaboride. For visa purposes, I won't talk about that material. So how to tell in experiments? Given a correlated material, which you suspect may be in a topological insulator, now what should you look at, right? Now, as a strict theorist, you know, the best way to say is look at the symmetry preserving surface topological order. But at least at this instant of time, that's a way to make sure that no experimentalist ever takes you seriously. So that's the, you know, this is a pro and a con. There's an alternate way, which is to look at a time T reversal breaking surface without topological order by depositing a ferromagnet on the surface. This has the advantage that there's a practical signature in surface hole transport, which is at least in principle doable. In practice, it's hard. But the con is that it's only a partial characterization. Right? But at least there's a partial characterization. So let me describe the surface hole transport. So let's break time reversal explicitly to get a trivial surface. Now, theta equals pi is distinguished from theta equals 0 by having the surface hole conductivity of half in units of E squared over h. You know, we've known forever, right? 7 years or whatever. So there's another probe which is very powerful, which is to measure the surface heat conductivity in the Hall channel, the thermal Hall conductivity. So 2 of the theta equals pi TIs have kappa xy equals half. And this is, so, you know, the familiar topological band insulator also has kappa xy equals half in the right units. You know, it's actually kappa xy by t times, you know, some powers of Boltzmann constant and so on. But the other 2 theta equals pi ti's have kappa xy of 9 over 2. Right? So that's a very striking difference between the topological band insulator. So similarly, 2 of the theta equals 0 TIs have kappa xy equals 0. This, of course, includes a trivial band insulator. But the other 2 have kappa xy equals 4. So the thing that at this stage of time, you know, instead of time, we can advocate is for, you know, this new generation of correlated topological insulator candidates that people should measure both electrical and thermal Hall transport to see, you know, to keep an open mind on what kind of topological insulator it is, whether it's a trivial one, you know, whether it's a band one or something that's an interacting version. How much time do I have left? Not much or none or negative? Negative, all right. So then I won't describe the slide, but there's some interesting side story that came out of this. Let me just finish. So the summary is that with interactions, you know, the problem that we set out to solve, this is the answer, this Z2Q classification, the 6 new TI faces that have no non-interacting counterpart and are short-range entangled with realistic symmetry. So the useful probe, as far as we can tell now, was to look at thermal Hall effect on the surface in addition to the electrical Hall effect. But from a physics point of view, really the most important question for which we don't have a clue currently in the field is, you know, what sorts of materials should are likely places to realize these interacting topological insulators. Right? For all the other purely theoretical questions, we have some idea at least. But in this direction, which is a really, really important direction, we don't have any idea at all. Right? Let me stop here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the theoretical spy insulators, yeah.
But I mean, I'm missing the, I guess this is my question, but I'm missing before you said, you know, the surface Hall conductivity can be integer plus half. That integer part is not important.
Yes.
The thermal conductivity somehow that integer is important. So
yes, that's right. Yeah.
So when should I think it's important? What's the criteria to tell?
Right. So the real criterion is to so when I said that integer is not important, so let's take the topological band insulator. Right? You can deposit a fermion integer quorum Hall state and shift the surface sigma xy from half by an integer. But that will also shift the surface kappa xy from half by the same integer. Right? So there's a Wiedemann-Franz. You know, the ratio of kappa xy to sigma xy is fixed for the topological band insulator. But here there's a mismatch between kappa xy and sigma xy.
The difference will be pretty much fixed.
The difference is fixed, that's right, yeah. Sure.